Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is Jason Keith. He is the founder and CEO of the Social Fresh Conference. He's a well-known speaker and publisher of socialfresh.com. And we're going to talk about a little bit of research that he and his group did about the future of social media. So, Jason, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, John. I'm excited to be on your show for the first time.
So it's interesting. I wrote a post actually just this week about where I saw the evolution of social media, and I got thinking about it. And I said, you know, it's a little more than a decade old, really. I think in mainstream, and you've been there for the whole journey, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, I was pitching clients in social media 10 years ago, and that's really what drove me to create the conference, which we're now in our eighth year of the conference. So I've been there for the whole journey. It's very interesting to see where things have gone, and finally did some original research on the topic, which was pretty exciting to dive into.
Yeah, and I want to get into various elements of that, but I wonder if you could sort of set the table by saying, gosh, I don't know if this is easy to do in one question or if this is more like five-part question, but you know, how has social media evolved, if it has, or maybe it's just our relationship with it has evolved, but I mean, how has it really evolved in your mind the most over the last, say, 5-6 years?
Yeah, I think that is a five-part question. So
it is indeed.
You know, I've had this question in the past a lot, and I think it's really important to look at because, I mean, social media, when I started, when I was at a few small agencies in the Southeast pitching folks on social media, it was basically YouTube, Facebook and blogging were pretty much all of it. And MySpace a little bit, although I don't think marketing really ever saw anything that was positive on MySpace.
Yeah.
You know, back then it was build an audience, engage with people in comments, and, you know, try to get traction on blogging for the few people you could convince to launch a blog for a business. And today, it's so much more robust. The advertising piece of social media is so important. You know, Facebook's made it important by making it really a pay-to-play system, and all the other social networks are really trending towards pay-to-play.
Yeah.
I think another big change today is video content, which is becoming a major piece for a lot of businesses. And if you're not looking at video as a content opportunity, you really should be for a lot of reasons, even if you're a small business. And I think, you know, when we look at messaging today, it's a trend where social messaging is now bigger than social networking. There's more people interacting on Facebook Messenger and Snapchat and all these other options, WhatsApp, et cetera, than there are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, kind of the public-facing versions of these apps. And I think that's a reflection of the larger trend of interaction of smaller audiences and the value of that, whether it's a Facebook group or whether it's a Snapchat thread, et cetera. People are starting to, or have continued to, really value those more intimate conversations and opportunities.
So let's get into, you co-authored, I think, a research report, The Future of Social Media. And so I want to dig into a couple elements of that specifically,
yeah.
but you might want to set it up. Who was involved? What was the methodology?
Yeah, our research partners, it's our report, Social Fresh Report. I really wanted to do this for the last year, and we found the right partners. We worked with our agency partner, Firebrand Group, which is really great out of New York, and our software partner was Simply Measured, which I love as a software solution for folks out of Seattle. And really, we just wanted to get social marketers, people that are focused on social media marketing, focused on the U.S., focused on decision makers, focused on brand side, and ask them a lot of questions about resources. You know, there's a lot of research out there. There's a lot of surveys. I wanted to know more about resources. So how are social marketers spending their time? Where are they directing their personnel? And how are they spending their budget? So that's where we focused, and we asked a lot of questions around that today and kind of moving forward into next year.
It's interesting. One of the first things that jumped out to me, because I agree with you, I think that the days of, hey, let's have huge followings and blast all kinds of content out to them and use it as a broadcast channel, you know, have kind of gone away, and people really are finding that, hey, the real money's in small groups, Facebook groups, you know, engaging one-on-one in Messenger. Yet, in contrast to that a little bit, one of the first questions talked about the, you know, how people actually use social media, and still a significant, I want to say, I think I rounded this up, maybe 76-ish% for awareness.
Yeah, yeah. So I found that really interesting as well. I think that was one of our first findings that we really wanted to get experts to comment on. And it was 76%. We allowed people to select up to two of their main goals for social media as a business, and awareness was up there as by far, three quarters of folks selecting that. And I think that's definitely a mistake. Not a mistake in the data, but a mistake in the right. motives of businesses, because social media can provide a great opportunity to build awareness. It's expensive, and if you have the budget and you're a big business, you're a new business, there's definitely opportunities for that. But it's not the lowest hanging fruit. It's not the most efficient use of your time. And most businesses, that should probably not be one of their top two goals. In fact, when we dissected the audience more and looked at based on their goals, who was succeeding the most, who was getting the most ROI of social, the folks who are getting the best ROI are people that are focused on customer loyalty, sales, and lead generation. And I think that kind of tells you a lot about, we come across this problem in social media, and I'd love to maybe hear if you agree, but there's a lot of vanity metrics. There's a lot of really public metrics that are easy to report on, that your boss is going to ask you about how many followers, how many retweets, how many comments, reshares, whatever. And you kind of have to report on those. And I think because of that, that's where the awareness, what was our reach? What were our retweets? And that is a kind of a side effect of all those public metrics, I think.
Yeah, and I think it goes to the point that actually, as you stated, that social media now fits in the entire customer journey. But there are elements of, my customer journey stages are know, like, trust, try, buy, repeat, and refer. There are elements of that repeat and refer in particular that I think are sometimes hard to track back to social media activity, yet I know that in some data that I've seen, that people talk about the most likely sources of referrals are leads that are actually converted from social media.
Yeah, and I think if you have an engaged customer or potential customer in social media, I think that's a huge loyalty opportunity. Yeah. We're spending more time on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and everything else. And if you are lucky enough to be a part of a person's social network that they check daily, they check weekly, whatever they do, we spend a lot of time on mobile on these things, then it's a great opportunity to touch base. I think video is another piece of that. If you're lucky enough to have a video interaction with a customer, or if they are listening to your podcast on a regular basis, these are loyalty builders. Even if they're not a customer, they could be someone that's just in your kind of a trust circle around your brand, whether they're a fan or they're in your pipeline as a part of building your product, whether they're just someone that's familiar with your company. These people are loyalty opportunities, word of mouth opportunities, referral opportunities. And I think it's for a lot of businesses, I think that's really important. And that's a pretty small audience usually.
For a long time, people bemoaned the fact that they couldn't really tell if there was any ROI in social media. And I thought it was interesting that 63% of the respondents felt that they had measurable return on investment through social media activity. I think that number has changed significantly, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that number 5 years ago would have been 10-20%, I think. Right. I think, and still today, a lot of the people that answered not sure or no to that question, which roughly 36%, I think, even they would have, I mean, they're investing in social media, so they see a benefit from it. They just can't necessarily say we can measure positive ROI. When we talk to those people, a lot of it was a technological barrier, or their goal is awareness, and they can't really build a return value on awareness, or they don't. So I think for me, that number was definitely high, 63%. I think that's really good. Now, this is people defining ROI on their own. We're not telling them how to define it, which you could argue is another discussion.
Yeah.
But I mean, I trust marketers typically when they tell me, even if they're measuring it in their own head as a gut instinct or anecdotally, if they know to them that they're getting a positive return, I think that's an important question to ask. And I think that's much higher than it has been in the past.
I thought a very interesting subset sort of that question was, and it really went to the fact that in some cases they're admitting they don't know how to measure the return. And I thought it was very interesting that you noted that people who use social software were much more sure about what the return on investment was.
Yeah, and you know, it's something, if I just asked you, you would probably guess that anyways, that people using social software are better at social media marketing. Because if you're only using just natively Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you're missing out on a lot of opportunity to improve your process and results. But that was the biggest correlation we saw in all the data by far. And basically 19 out of 20 people that use social software saw positive ROI. And it was more of a coin flip, 50-50, for people that aren't using social software. So I think that tells you a lot. I think it's people that aren't using social software are it's probably not a majority of their job to do social media. They're probably new to it. They're new to a role, or it's new to the company as an investment. So I think, you know, even if we looked at the specific software we were using, if it was more of an introductory software like a Hootsuite versus maybe a Sprinklr or Sprout Social, we saw better ROI with the kind of higher end software as well. Not as big of a correlation, but still a correlation. So I think that's interesting to see. When you put resources, when you put budget behind social media, you are seeing almost, you know, 95-96% are seeing a positive ROI, which I thought was really cool to see.
So staying on the ROI track for a moment, not hugely surprising to me, but the way that people interpreted the effectiveness of various platforms. You know, Facebook, in terms of ROI right now, is the golden platform, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Facebook was the number one answer to pretty much every question we asked, which you could guess. It is the internet in a lot of ways today, right? Their saturation is just tremendous. But people are, it was good to see that they're not only there, but they're seeing a huge return. 96% of people said that Facebook provided the best ROI, one of their top returns for all social networks, and then followed by Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, which I think people would probably expect. Mm-hmm. And I think it just shows you Facebook is not only just the dominant platform, but they're the dominant performance opportunity when it comes to most businesses in social media.
Well, they clearly have the ad opportunity. I mean, in some ways, they set everybody up by getting them to build huge audiences and getting used to that engagement on Facebook, and then said, now we're going to take it away and you have to pay for it.
Yeah, I think I think that's clearly what happened. Yes, I think their ad platform, they've given care to it. They've listened to advertisers. They've really made an ad platform that's the best out there, even compared to Google in a lot of ways.
Well, from a return on investment, I would suggest hugely better.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of companies that should still be advertising on Google for a lot of reasons. But when it comes to a DIY platform that any business can pick up and get a return on, I think Facebook just has is head and shoulders above everyone else out there. And, of course, Instagram as well, now that they're on the same platform.
So social media marketing world this year, you know, the shiny object was for marketers was Snapchat. And there was, I don't know if you were there this year, but there was a panel, and Gary Vee was interviewed and asked, you know, because he had talked about Snapchat, you know, on and on and on in his keynote, and asked point blank, you know, have you seen any business to business return on investment on Snapchat? And he point blank said, no, zero. Can't figure out how to make any money on it at all, but I'm going there anyway because everybody's talking about it right now. And so now the brands that are the cool kids on Snapchat are getting talked about, but nobody's figured out how to make any money on it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's important for Gary to be on Snapchat. I think it's important for media brands to be on Snapchat. And if you're a marketer, it's important for you to know about it, to experiment with it, to kind of understand why it's successful, why millennials are there, why even senior citizens are getting on Snapchat. I mean, there's why the engagement is so high there. Like, you need to understand it as a marketer. For most businesses, I'm not going to tell you to get on Snapchat and invest in it as a platform. You can't measure it. The audience is very unique to a younger generation right now. The type of content is a heavy spend for most people. To do Snapchat on a regular basis takes quite a bit of work, a learning curve. But it is important. He's right. I mean, I talked to Mitch Joel recently about, you know where social networks are going to evolve. It looks like Twitter's declining, mm-hmm. Instagram's surging. I could see Snapchat becoming in the next couple years the third most significant social network for businesses because of the engagement factor on there. But today, it's hard to suggest that someone should spend money on Snapchat compared to Instagram, compared to LinkedIn, compared to Facebook. Unless they have an audience that's very specific to millennials, unless they're a media brand that kind of as the team to produce a ton of content. Yeah. It's a hard ask for a lot of businesses.
You did a lot of research or a number of questions around what the team needs to look like and what resources people put from a team standpoint. And one of the things I thought was interesting is 5 years ago, the role to hire was a community manager, and it almost feels like that's sort of outdated now.
Well, and I think most companies that are invested in social media have hired that, right? And I think that's always going to be a key role. But most companies kind of only need one community manager. Mm-hmm. If you're an enterprise company, that's different. If you have huge customer service role when it comes to social engagement, that's different. But for most companies, they just need the one person to manage, two or three social networks. But when it comes to creating content, more companies plan to hire a content-specific role than a social media manager / community manager role in the next year. So I think when you scale content, you do need more people. You do need people that can write, that can create video, that understand how content and the strategy of content works. So if you're going to scale something, you're going to scale content before you're going to scale community response, engagement response, usually for the average company.
So on the team aspect again, I guess I didn't find this shocking at all, but I wonder if you think this is a little bit skewed, that in terms of allocation of time spent, only 14% on promotion. Does that strike you as low?
I think it's low if I were to talk to a company about where they should be spending their time,
right?
Optimally, but it doesn't surprise me as that's where people are spending their time. I think still today, most people spend most of their time creating content, responding to customers, responding to people in social media, and then an afterthought is promoting that social media. I mean, there's companies that are getting it right, obviously. I think they're outliers. And also, some of that's outsourced. A lot of the advertising was the most likely thing to be outsourced that we came across. So I think the promotion is both strategically just not thought about enough ahead of time and not planned for enough. I think more people should be focusing more time on less pieces of content and promoting those pieces of content repeatedly.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't happen as much as it should, I don't think.
So on the advertising element, while that is the piece that people do outsource, I was really surprised that there was one at least slide that implied 78% of people do their social advertising in-house. I found that to be really high.
Yeah, I mean, when we look across the board, most brands are doing most of their social media in-house.
Mm-hmm. But I get, but the advertising piece was the part that I thought would actually be that many would be outsourcing to, say, an agency relationship that they already had.
Yeah, no, I think one of the things we found is that the average business is low on resources when it comes to social media. And because of that, they don't have an agency. Mm-hmm. They do not have budget to outsource things, and they're doing everything in-house when they can. I mean, I think the trend line is definitely more money, more resources flowing into social media. But for the average company that you're talking to, not everybody has the opportunity that Fortune 500 or even a large size company has to have an agency.
Well, but having said that, then do you find, and this maybe wasn't in the research, but in your experience, is social advertising being done outside of marketing's advertising?
Outside of the kind of department of marketing?
Yeah, department, different people, different budget, not really looked at as part of the whole?
Sometimes, yeah. I think where social advertising sits is quite, there's a lot of variance there.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's with search teams that are running the Google spend already. Sometimes it's with the media agency that's doing the media buying. You're seeing a lot of people trying to grab those budgets, and I think because of that, every company is different, every agency is different, every budget planning is different, and you see companies shifting it. I've seen companies shift it from the media buying team to the social media team to the digital agency. So I think it's different, and I think you also have to follow who's doing best for your advertising. There's companies that specialize in social advertising, companies specialize in Facebook advertising, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And these things shift so much. I mean, what works on Facebook advertising shifts every month or two or three. So if the people that are running your social advertising are not performing for you, you kind of shift it to people that are staying up to date on it.
I thought there were some interesting nuggets in terms of how people interpreted what advertising platforms, social advertising platforms, were working for them. And probably the one that was the most surprising to me was how significant the ROI was pegged to LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, a few of the little things that I liked about what we found in the Future Social Report was that we found a few niche opportunities that are succeeding for people. And I think that shows you kind of the fragmentation of social media. LinkedIn is still a great option for a certain segment of businesses. You know, it's usually B2B, SaaS companies, software companies in general, especially with high ticket items, are going to succeed on LinkedIn better. They have the type of targeting that they want on LinkedIn. They can target job titles, they can target CIOs, things like that. And I think that's really successful for them. But it's expensive to succeed on LinkedIn. The advertising on LinkedIn is more expensive, more expensive. Yeah. And because of that, it's only a small audience that can succeed there. But they have consistently seen results. And LinkedIn has continued to invest in that audience. And I think because of that, we're going to continue to see, you know, maybe 10 to 15% of businesses get great performance out of LinkedIn. And you also have SlideShare there as an option, which I think is a subset of that, but still the same kind of story. Yeah,
good point. So let's talk about forms of content. Again, not shocking here, but I was a little surprised at how much people were pointing towards ROI of images.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, when you think about Facebook ads, especially, it's images, right? When you think about how many companies are focusing more on maybe like a Snapchat, an Instagram, a Pinterest, it's all images. So I get that images are succeeding for people. When you look at even Twitter, images succeed more than, you know, a lot of other things, whether it's a GIF or whether it's a video, it's all visual, right? Mm-hmm. So the move to visual, I get, especially when you're doing social advertising, right, you need visuals. And I think that's when you talk to people about return, I think they're leaning mentally towards the advertising part of things because that's what they track most. That's where they see the easiest correlation and things.
Well, and I think a question that probably goes with that was that's actually the easiest form of content to create by far. And I think there might be some correlation between those two elements that they partly see return because, you know, blog posts and videos, you know, are hard in some cases. And here's my question, I wonder, and I don't think your research went into this, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. If there's a bias towards that and I'm going to do that, am I suffering or am I sort of giving away the asset value, say, of long-form blog content and the shelf life? Because I don't think the shelf life of an image is probably very long.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you're right. You know, it's the I part of ROI rather than the R. You know, the time commitment, what is the investment in that? And when, just as an aside here, when I talk to people about video, you know, one of the things I think it's important to measure for video is how much time it takes you to do it. Because if it takes you 100 hours for every video you create and it only gives you a 10% better return, then, you know, there's an equation problem there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think every business is different. You know, blog posts perform for a lot of businesses, but a lot of people feel comfortable investing in a blog for their business because it's a big time sink and it takes a while to ramp up a blog.
Yeah.
White papers see success, webinars, contests, infographics, all these things see success, but they're time sinks. Same for video. I think video is more acceptable. You have a lot of big companies with budgets committed to TV commercials, and there's a little bit more trust in video, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you get into these questions about should I be investing in this specific type of content because we don't know if it'll work for us, I think it's very different for all companies. You know, what B2B does versus B2C is very different. You know, white papers and blog posts and webinars and things like that are very much a B2B play for the most part, whether that's good advice or bad. You know, that's typically who invests in those opportunities. So I think if you start to break it down by the type of company and what they're used to and where they've seen results in the past, you get a much more complete story.
has you spend a chapter, so to speak, in this research on influencer marketing. And it occurs to me, as somebody who's been involved in that and in some cases seen as an influencer and courted as an influencer, that that has matured significantly. The days of, you know, let's just go find somebody who's got an audience and see if they'll put their name on our stuff has, I think that's kind of waned, hasn't it?
I think there is still a piece of that going on. I think that's kind of the default, right? Hey, we get awareness for this new product, launch, rebrand, whatever it is. Who's somebody that we can pay some money to that'll talk about it for us? Let's get Ashton Kutcher or Kardashian. Mm-hmm. There's this default in the lazy marketer to go to that.
Right.
But I think if you are able to sustain a commitment to influencer marketing, if you're long-term with it and you're thinking you're going to look for people that are more aligned with the brand, that are already talking about things that are relevant to your brand, already talking about your brand, hopefully.
Or they maybe have a much more engaged audience than a Kardashian.
I see people that are investing heavily into influencer marketing, brands that are investing in heavily into it, I see much more vetting.
Yeah.
I see much more focus on engagement versus reach. I see much more engagement on quality of content and kind of quality of engagement. So I think it's definitely matured. I still think it's a small subset. Most people are not doing influencer marketing. It's hard to do. It's also very likely to be outsourced. And I think if you're scaling it, it has to be outsourced because there's a lot of tasks and skills that are associated with influencer marketing that most people have not done before. And just it takes a lot of work.
Jason, where can people find the future of social media marketing? I got that right.
Yeah, if you go to socialfresh.com/future, you can download the free version of the report. We also have a paywalled version that's more in depth. And you can, if you have any questions about it, feel free to tweet me at Jason Keith, KEATH.
It really is, I think, an interesting read, a pretty quick read, and probably something that anybody that is in the business of marketing should at least familiarize themselves with. Tell us a little bit about the Social Fresh Conference. This, depending upon when you're listening to this, it is coming up. And so give us a little rundown on it.
I'd love to. Thank you. I appreciate that. And thanks for the kind words about the report. I really appreciate that. I hope people get value out of it. That's why we did it. Our conference is in Orlando this year, the annual Social Fresh Conference. This will be our 18th conference. Mm. We've been doing this our 8th year in building it. We've done a few per year sometimes, but we're doing it annual now. And it'll be 3 to 4 days, depending on your ticket, of social marketing and what's next for the industry. We always talk about the fundamentals of the industry. And this year, we're, of course, going to be talking about the future of the industry as well, talking about Snapchat and live streaming and everything that you could think of that's attached to social media. We've got some great speakers like Mitch Joel and Peter Shankman, and Twitter will be there, Weather Channel will be there, the Red Cross will be there. We have a great lineup of speakers. So if you're interested, you have questions about it, check out socialfreshconference.com. We'll be down in Orlando in August 18th to 21st. Awesome. Should be a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for stopping by, Jason, and sharing this information. I'm talking with Jason Keith, the founder and CEO of the Social Fresh Conference, and we are talking about the future of social media marketing. So thanks, Jason. Maybe we'll see you out there on the road somewhere.
Thank you so much, John. It's been a pleasure.